This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
Thank you, Keith Cam, for the news. My name is Rich Bradbury. This, of course, is Enterprise Biz Bytes. And as usual, there's a terrible twosome in the studio with me. Right now it is...
Christine Wong.
And Audrey Raj.
Hello, ladies. How are you today?
Good.
Hungry.
Hungry.
Always.
There's a lot of food out there right now. Ladies and gents, we've got five stories for you, as usual, here on Biz Bytes on a Wednesday.
Yep, well, it's Thursday.
Thursday. Right, story number one, how a new system will be connecting your mind to a machine to help stop mistakes.
Don't date that man. Is that how it goes?
Stopping our mistakes.
I wish. No, it's the other way around. We'll see.
All right. Another story about Facebook. They just can't seem to do anything right now. They are now suggesting that some Facebook groups may start charging a monthly subscription fee for access. Really?
Did you not see this coming?
No, I didn't. And then story number three, how Microsoft and Flipgrid... Who are Flipgrid?
I will tell you who Flipgrid is later.
They're uniting for social learning. Story number four, Truepic have raised $8 million to expose the deepfakes to verify photos for Reddit. And story number five, Instagram, being original, expands into long videos.
Yes.
Do we want vertical long videos, though?
No, it's going to be called something... it's called IGTV, and I'll tell you more.
IGTV
in a bit, yeah.
All right, then. Let's talk about this story that connects your mind to a machine, please, Christine.
Yeah, so basically, there's a huge problem with automation in terms of if they're going down the wrong track and making a wrong decision, it's difficult to course correct them. So how do you tell a robot to not do something that could be catastrophic?
Don't do that.
You could give it, like you've just demonstrated, a verbal or programmatic command, or... You could just have it, you know, watch your brain for signs of distress and have it stop itself.
Signs of distress?
Yes.
Panic, you mean?
Yes.
Okay.
But that's what researchers at MIT's Robotics Research Lab have done with a system that is wired to your brain and then tells robots how to do their job. So what it is a scalp EEG and EMG system is connected to a robot. In this case, it's a Baxter Work robot. And if the robot is doing something that it shouldn't be doing, the human can just wave or gesture and then the robot will fix itself.
Isn't this, well, similar to just having someone watch over you while you do something and then just tell you, no, this is not the way you're supposed to do it.
You're talking about the mummy hover, aren't you?
Yes.
Right.
But no, that's exactly what they're trying
to do.
So
why does it need to be, wired to your brain?
Because it's so that the robot can actually pick up on your muscle and brain signals.
And it's the future, Audrey.
Okay.
Yeah. And basically, if you have to manually input a command, it might be too late. If it's a snap decision, you want them to respond immediately. So using these signals, you can start to pick up on a person's natural gestures and their snap decisions about if something is going wrong. So it basically, the whole point is to make communicating with a robot more like communicating with a real person. The other thing about that, though, is also that because the system uses nuances like gestures and emotional reactions, you can also use this technology to train robots to interact with humans with disabilities. And you can even prevent accidents by catching concern or alarm before it's even communicated verbally in the first place. So you can... Basically, prevention is better than cure in terms of robotics. So there's a video of this up on TechCrunch. And basically, what the robot does is that it's trained to drill holes in an airplane fuselage. But they kept making little adjustments to the task. So a human standing nearby was able to gesture to the robot to change position before it drilled.
I'm just imagining left a bit.
Yeah,
left a bit.
But that's exactly what it could do. Yeah. And for a robot, that's essentially training it to create new tasks in the middle of its current task,
which
is difficult to
do. So it's adding to its data sense.
Yeah. So it's basically in its brain, it's like, I'm going to do a thing. Then it's like, oh, wait, no, sorry, no, not that thing, this thing. And that is a reaction that we haven't been able to capture in robots yet. So what's also great about this is that you don't have to train people to work with these robots. This is just the way that humans work already. So the machine adapts to you, not the other way around.
I like this.
Yeah?
Yeah, I think it's smart. I mean,
I'm
getting that skeptical. No, come on, Odds, what's your worry about this?
I don't know about having a robot, you know, like wired to my brain, because wouldn't it also learn that? Because like someone like me, who is kind of like, well, has an impulse about everything that happens that is new, you know, it's like, it's extra cautious, you know, that's what I would call myself, myself. You know, would that also, well, be transferred onto the robot?
The thing is that I can relate to that because I'm also quite a cautious person, but I think that's the whole point. Like, if you are a cautious person and they're about to do something, at least they can have a pause, like a moment to like double check back with you to see if it's something that is like actually dangerous or something that you are just like, oh, and then you can move
the
on.
The old measure twice, cut once kind of mentality.
Yeah. Ah, all right. But what if you're indecisive or if you're a fickle person then?
Then you know, you just don't know if you're doing it right. You're not allowed to do this.
Then this is just not for me.
Not for you. Not for you. Teach robots well, thanks.
All right. Let's move on to story number two. We've got something about how Facebook groups may soon start charging you for monthly subscription fees for access. We did have a story yesterday about how Facebook will be sneakily or not so sneakily pushing auto-playing videos into your Facebook Messenger. Did you hear that story yesterday, Auds?
No, I didn't. I missed it.
Yeah, we were a little bit annoyed about that. I mean, we were talking about how annoying it is already that we're already getting ads all over our Facebook feed. We know we have to put up with them. And sometimes you get the static ads within your private messaging. But now, you know, they're introducing this auto-playing video thing. But now they're looking at letting administrators of groups start charging between $4.99 to $29.99 a month for exclusive membership into certain groups within Facebook.
But, okay, what kind of Facebook groups are you guys in? I mean, do you find them beneficial?
Yes, I actually do.
Yeah?
I wouldn't pay for them. That's the thing.
Okay, when I was in university, I used Facebook groups a lot more for the various societies that I was involved in and such like. But I was already paying to be in the societies in the first place. I don't want to pay an extra fee for communication purposes.
Right, right.
At the moment, I'm not very active in a lot of Facebook groups, but I'm active in my kind of community's Facebook group. Like, I've joined them and it's good for updates. But I would not pay for that either. So to me, you know, what this is that it's monetizing something that, like, defeats the purpose of Facebook in the first place.
Okay.
So what kind of Facebook groups are we talking about?
Let me explain a little bit further. So parenting, cooking, and home cleaning groups will be the first ones to get the new feature as part of a test, right?
Home cleaning groups.
Yes. Mm. So as it stands now, the free groups will remain intact, but they'll soon have the option to launch premium subgroups. For instance, lifestyle blogger Sarah Mueller's Declutter My Home group is starting an Organize My Home group that costs $14.99 a month to join. And the Grown and Flown Parent group is making a college admissions group that charges $29.99 for access to college counselors. So while in the past Facebook groups have always been free, charging for membership might heighten the sense of exclusivity and make a group feel more special to be in. A paywall may also just drive people away, right?
Yeah.
I was about to say the whole appeal of Facebook is that it's free. So all this information, all of these people that you could talk to, the potential to connect with other people is for free. It's putting everyone on an equal playing field.
Right.
You know, like you can have like a blue collar worker have Facebook and you can have the top paid CEO in the world have Facebook and they're on the same level and they can talk to each other if that is what they so choose.
Right.
That is the whole point.
Right.
If you start putting a charge on Facebook groups, like, first of all, I would be curious to just see who would pay for that. Like, why would you need to do that when you could, you know, have access to the same information by going to another website and Googling it?
I mean, that's the thing, right? I mean, so something like a website that allows you access to college counselors, for example.
Yeah.
Direct access. You know, I could see why that would attract people who want to pay a fee to, you know, give their kids a bit of a step up and have a bit more communication like that. But if you're doing it via a Facebook group where it's a bunch of people talking to one another, you know, it doesn't really, for me, make much sense.
Yeah, like that $14.99 to join the group to organize...
Organize my home.
Organize my home. Are they sending a maid over to organize my home for me? Because that's worth 60 ringgit.
Right.
Least,
I mean,
you know?
And once you've kind of, you know, organized your home, are you going to continue to pay that subscription fee? You wouldn't want to, right?
And also with the educational thing with the college counselors, I find that actually kind of despicable because there's such a big issue already where, you know, people who are privileged enough to get an education already have so much access to these resources that maybe underprivileged kids don't. And if you then charge a subscription on Facebook for these college counselors, these underprivileged kids lose out even more. And I find that, like, I actually find that kind of repulsive.
Okay. Would you pay to join a Facebook group? Would you do that? No, I know.
No.
I wouldn't. No.
And what kind of...
absolutely would not.
Right, okay.
And what kind of groups would you pay to join?
Okay, I'll tell you what groups I'm involved with, and this will kind of give like a broad picture, right? So I'm involved with a couple of cryptocurrency groups. I'm involved with one of those excuse me, Kale expat groups.
Uh-huh.
Just, you know. I'm involved with a neighborhood group of where I'm at and stuff for trading furniture and guitars and all of that kind of stuff. You're just like a trading group. Mm. What about you guys? What are you involved in?
Yeah, so I'm in my neighborhood's Facebook group. I think that's like mainly about it. I might be still in some society groups, but I don't go on them anymore because I'm on the wrong continent.
Right. Oats?
Zero groups. Yeah.
Okay, fair enough. Yeah. All right, folks, let us know. Would you pay to join a Facebook group? In fact, the groups that you're in right now, do you think any of those are worth paying to be involved in? Let us know, 018-789-8899, or get us on WhatsApp at BFM Radio. We'll take a short break. When we come back, hope to get some feedback. But then we'll have story number three, how Microsoft and Flipgrid are uniting for social learning, all here on Enterprise Biz Bytes on BFM 89.9.
Best flipping moments. BFM 89.9, the business station.
Welcome back to Enterprise Biz Bytes. I'm Rich Bradbury in the studio with
Audrey Raj
and Christine Wong.
Just before the break, we were talking about a new system that connects your mind to machines to help stop mistakes. Then we talked a little bit about how Facebook groups may soon charge monthly subscription fees for access. We asked you guys, after we'd asked Audrey, who's not in any groups, myself and Christine, who are in groups.
The thing is that I'm already part of like countless WhatsApp groups. Do I need to be part of Facebook groups as well? Plus, they send you unnecessary notifications.
This is true.
Just exit.
We've had a couple of messages. Chris, what have we got?
So this comes from Danny. And Danny says that Facebook groups provide a forum for like-minded people to organize and to gain value for that interaction. So, for example, like a group for mothers where homemakers put up their homemade goods, like cakes or something, for sale. In that case, they would get to make like a side income. Doing something that they know. And in that case, maybe the value of the group on a monetary level might be more obvious.
Good point. But is it the people who are contributing to that group who are likely to get the money, or the administrators of that group who are likely to get the money?
Actually, where is the subscription money going to?
Exactly. It's not exactly clear as yet as to where that money is going to.
Right.
Let us know, though. Keep feeding back. Would you pay to have exclusive access to a Facebook group, be it a baking group, or a cooking group, or organize my home group.
Or even like a just trying to make friends group.
Let us know. 018-789-8899 on WhatsApp or on Twitter, of course, at BFM Radio. Moving on, story number three. Microsoft and a company called Flipgrid are uniting for social learning. Tell me more.
Yes. So Microsoft has acquired this company called Flipgrid, which is an education startup with an app that lets students record and share videos on specific topics with their classmates. So this is a video-based social learning platform for from pre-kindergarten all the way up to PhD level students. So how it works is teachers will assign homework and then students respond by recording short video messages in response. So this is believed to strengthen emotional skills beyond the traditional curricula.
Right.
Skills that that the company's recent research says will be required in 30 to 40% of the fastest growing occupations now and in the future. So this is a skill that they believe will be needed right now and in the future as well. And so they're trying to capitalize on this, and Microsoft has come in at the right time to partner with Flipgrid. Now, the move also shows that Microsoft is eager to remain in education, where Google's Chromebooks have become very popular.
I thought you were going to say relevant for a second.
Yeah. Then. So Google introduced Google Classroom back in 2014 as a place for teachers to give out assignments and for students to hand them in using the company's productivity apps like Google Docs. Mm. And in 2016, Microsoft, decided to jump in as well. They unveiled a similar tool called Microsoft Classroom as part of its Office 365 productivity software package. It has since retired that product and added the assignment features into what it calls Teams. So Flipgrid will now integrate with Teams for chatting with other people, and also another Microsoft offering called OneNote for taking notes. So Flipgrid will work with Teams and with OneNote, but Flipgrid on its own is much more focused on videos than Teams, and with more than 20 million users already, it will retain its brand rather than get pushed into Teams, is what Microsoft has promised. So Flipgrid itself is a great success. It's raised about $17 million US dollars in venture funding, and now Microsoft will offer the service to schools for free. Previously, it was based on subscriptions. It's doing that because it's done the same with Office 365 education, and customers who've purchased a subscription for Flipgrid will receive a prorated refund.
Okay, so wait. So the whole point of Flipgrid integrating into this educational system is for kids to upload videos of themselves responding to assignments and stuff like that?
Yes, yes.
But Flipgrid still remains something that is accessible by people who are not in that school?
Yes.
So my question is, like, how secure is Flipgrid? Like, I'm thinking from if hypothetically I were a parent, you know, would I be comfortable with having my child's face and voice on a public platform that's supposed to be for, like, educational reasons? I would, like, list, like, what school they're at and, like, you know, that sort of thing. Like, is there going to be, like, a separate, like, system for that or, like, a private group or something? I mean, I don't know how
Flipgrid works.
I'm
guessing it would likely be private groups per school, perhaps. Mm-hmm. That, I mean, that would make sense, right? Yeah.
I think a cousin of mine mentioned something like this that he's using in Australia right now. Okay. And what they do is that they're part of that group only for the semester.
Right.
Only until that curricula or that subject is done,
right,
and you're part of that group, you get to hand in your assignments online, you get to look at the notes online. But once the subject is done, you've already done the tests and you've passed, then you kind of have to, you'll be exited from the group.
Okay, all right.
Yeah.
Ah. That's smart.
So this is group work where technically you don't need to meet in the group. This is like a lazy person's ideal, you know. But we've all been part at university. We're all part of that group, and there's always one person who doesn't want to get there.
Yes,
and you know they can't. This is ideal for them, isn't it?
They kind of just leech off everyone's notes, but then they never really show up, right?
It's
right.
Not a topic of conversation I want to go down because I'm gonna get real salty about it. But positive perspective, though, I think this is great for teaching kids soft skills. I think it's great for teaching them presentation skills. It's stuff that, you know, sometimes you go through the educational system and then you get out of it and you're like, I have no idea how to act in a job interview. I don't know how to present myself. I don't know how to word my points when faced with a situation where you have to kind of just be on the spot and in front of someone, and your facial expression, how you say things, what you say. I think this is great in that respect.
It's a good move for Microsoft, for sure.
Yes, definitely. They're trying to keep up with Google, right?
Yeah.
But here's the thing. To think about it, right, 30 to 40% of occupations now and in the future will be using videos to communicate.
Yeah.
So, you know, that's a point to think about.
Mm-mm. Okay, should we take a break?
Yeah.
Let's have some music.
Yes.
All right. A bit of Queen. Yes?
Yes. Oh,
I'm glad you're so excited. It is One Vision from Queen here on Enterprise Biz Bytes on BFM 89.9. When we get back, story number 4, Truepic raising $8 million to expose deepfakes to help verify photos for Reddit, because it's such a huge problem, here on BFM 89.9.
Brewing Financial Minds, BFM 89.9.
Welcome back to Enterprise Biz Bytes. My name is Rich Bradbury in the studio with the terrible twosome of
Audrey Raj
and Christine Wong.
We've had a couple of messages during the break regarding the Facebook groups and one thing or another, and of course the Microsoft and Flipgrid uniting for social learning. We've had a couple of messages. Last time Darren called and left us a voicemail message. He's done the same thing today.
Yeah.
Let's play it, Christine.
Okay.
Let's do this.
Hi guys, interesting subject. My name is Darren. I feel that these days with technology and online and internet and everything which is available, we don't need to Facebook groups unless it's very specific. But I feel that most information can be found online. So even if you want to belong to a group because we need certain kind of information, or we want to belong to a group that supports us, I think these kind of systems already are in place online. But for WhatsApp groups, fine. I think most of us use WhatsApp groups for work and social needs. But other than that, I don't think that we need to 100% belong to Facebook groups. Not really, not yet. And which coming in with the cost of belonging to one, if they were really going to let us there, I mean, charge us for being, I don't think it's very practical. Thank you.
Thank you, Darren. Okay, I agree with that. It's kind of saying exactly what we've been saying as well, kind of reinforcing that a little bit. There's some of the stuff that, you know, I don't want to pay to be in a group that I can just find information from online.
But it's redundant.
It is redundant. But, you know, if it is a group where there is specific information that you can't find online, I mean, I don't know. Maybe it is worth paying for. There were some groups, if you remember, here in Malaysia, where a middle-aged man was arrested for supplying people. He was a particular kind of baker that supplied a. Do you remember this one? He supplied people with a certain type of herb, If you know what I mean.
What kind of groups are you in, Rich?
I'm not in the group, sadly. But, you know, he had a particular group where, you know, he supplied, let's just call it medicinal.
I don't know anything about any of this.
Of course not.
But, you know, I genuinely don't.
I'm not saying, you know, we should, you know, push these kind of groups forward. But I can see where some people would pay for that kind of information.
But what about a networking group? You know, if you had some, well, upper affluent individuals, you know, who were in a group and you wanted to get in on that and you think you had ideas to share.
Yeah, maybe.
Funding.
I think it all depends on the fees and how much they're going to charge us to be part of these groups. I mean, if they're an affordable price, if they're like $1.99 or, you know, a month.
And you also want to know who is going to be part of that group.
And whether or not it's worth joining, right? Yeah. Okay, let's move on to the to another message we've just had.
Yeah, so this is coming on Twitter. This is at Mei Ying T. She says, I'm currently paying for a Facebook group, sort of. I have a subscription to a group of graduates from a course I've attended, and the monthly subscription includes monthly webinars and access to the Facebook group for graduates to support each other.
Interesting. Mm.
So, I mean, my question to that is, you know, is it worth it? Are you enjoying that? Is it something that you think is worth what you're paying?
Are you getting your money's worth?
Yeah.
All right, what story do we have now? Oh, yes, TruePic raising $8 million to expose the deep fakes.
Yes, so we've talked about deepfakes before on BizBytes, and it is that really terrifying technology that is generated by artificial intelligence to essentially be able to mimic a person's face.
Right.
On a video or a photo.
And their mouths.
And their mouth and their emotions.
Scary.
And everything. Terrifying. So how can you be sure that an image is real? So this startup called TruePic makes a camera feature that shoots photos and adds a watermark URL that then leads to a copy of the image it saves so that viewers can compare them to ensure that the version they're seeing has not been altered. On a more kind of basic note, it's being advertised as one way that Reddit can verify that their Ask Me Anything Q&As are being conducted live by the actual person advertised.
Right.
It's not an agreement or anything with Reddit. It's just that the subreddit moderators have just opted to suggest that people use TruePic. But beyond, obviously, that kind of self-verifying AMAs, dating profiles, peer-to-peer e-commerce listings, TruePic is tackling its biggest challenge yet, which is identifying deepfakes. So the need for ways to weed out deepfakes has actually attracted a new $8 million round for TruePic. The cash comes from untraditional startup investors, including Dowling Capital Partners, former Thomson Financial, so now Reuters, Harvard Business School professor William Salmon, and more, which then brings them up to a grand total of $10.5 million in funding.
Whew.
So the way that TruePic works is... you snap a photo using TruePic's iOS or Android app, or an app that's been paid to embed its SDK in their own app. Then TruePic verifies that the image hasn't been altered already. It doesn't say how they're going to do this, but apparently they do. And then watermarks it with a timestamp, a geocode, a URL, amongst other metadata. TruePic's secure servers will then store a version of the photo, assigned with a 6-digit code and its URL, plus a spot on an immutable blockchain. Then users can post their TruePic in apps to prove they're not catfishing someone or selling something broken or whatever. And viewers can visit the URL watermarked onto the photo to compare it to the Vault Save version to ensure that it hasn't been modified after the fact.
Very smart.
Very, 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 very smart. And what is interesting is that actually the founder and CEO, Craig Stack, said that they actually started TruePic long before manipulated images, you know, impacted democratic elections across the globe, before digital evidence of atrocities and human rights abuses were regularly undermined. But now we fully recognize, you know, that the world needs TruePic technology to help right the wrongs that have been created by the abuse of digital imagery.
Go on, let's...
So, you know, when listening to this, all I can think about is, in basically what this is someone keeping the negatives of your photo in a safe.
Essentially,
right?
Yes.
Yeah, and so that if another photo comes up and looks, you know, familiar, then you just pull the negatives out of your safe and like, hey, you know, this is the original.
This is the original. This is fake.
Yeah. But then if you read further, you find that how TruePic does this is it can actually analyze someone's hair or ears or reflectivity of a person's eyes and other details that are nearly impossible to render true to life across thousands of frames of a typical video or a photo. So, you know, it really goes much deeper into just having the negatives there and having a six-digit pin,
and it, you know, it's locked in on the blockchain as well. Yeah. It's there forever. Yeah. You know, it's very safe.
Yeah, so it's not just about, you know, having the negatives in a safe, but also being able to identify exactly what makes that negative original, essentially. Yeah. And fact of the matter is that deepfakes are terrifying. Mm-hmm. You can use them to do small things like embarrass celebrities, but you could also start a war.
Mm.
Because, you know, what a Truepic's technology hopes to do is that it hopes to keep content creators honest. And they've also begun partnering with NGOs like the Syrian American Medical Society to help them deliver verified documentation of atrocities in the country's conflict zone. The Human Rights Foundation has also trained humanitarian leaders on how to use Truepic at the 2018 Freedom Forum in Oslo. Oh. So this is something that I think is really addressing a huge, huge issue.
It's bigger than just, oh yeah, we've made a way of verifying photos.
Yeah, you know, yeah. Like, it's great that, the Reddit Ask Me Anything can use it as well, but it goes so much further than that, and I'm glad that they're making steps forward to actually ensure that the technology is used for the powers of good.
Aww. Progress.
Yes. Good story. Okay, we'll take a break with some music. We've got Kiss coming up with Stutter. If you want to keep feeding back regarding the Facebook groups and whether or not you'd pay to be part of a Facebook group with a monthly subscription, let us know. 018-789-8899 or get us on Twitter at BFM Radio. We're going to take a short break. When we get back, final story of the day, how Instagram are expanding into long videos compete with YouTube. I think I need to go to bed. Anyway, you're listening to BizBytes here on BFM 89.9.
Building first world mindsets. BFM 89.9.
Welcome back to Enterprise BizBytes. My name is Rich Bradbury in the studio with Audrey Raj and, of course, Christian Wong. We've got more messages coming in regarding the Facebook groups and the Microsoft and Flipgrid Facebook groups.
Yeah, so this is a response from @MingT on Twitter. She messaged us saying that she kind of already pays for a Facebook group for graduates, and we just asked, you know, do you think it's worth it? And she says, yes, it is worth it because of the quality of conversations between the graduates. I personally think that it would really depend on the quality of the members in the group because there are certainly some groups I would never pay for.
That's true.
Fair enough.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Okay, thanks for the feedback. If you want to keep them coming, 018-789-8899 or on Twitter at BFM Radio. Final story of the day. It's an Instagram story. They're expanding into long videos, hoping to compete with YouTube. Do we not have enough video lengthy app stuff now? I mean, what are they allowing up to 1 hour's worth of video?
Yes.
Hey.
Yeah, but that's the way forward. I mean, it needs to be said that Facebook, YouTube, Snapchat, they've all been spending heavily to grow mobile video services that will attract both users and corporate brand advertising because, like we mentioned earlier, you know, 30 to 40% of occupations in the future will be using videos.
True.
And this is for recreational purposes, right?
Uh-huh, uh-huh.
So Instagram has launched a mobile app called IGTV. It's dedicated to user-generated videos of up to an hour long, intensifying the competition for consumers' time, among other video streaming services like YouTube. So this is what the CEO of Instagram said. His name is Kevin Systrom, and he said at the launch in San Francisco, teens are now watching 40% less TV than they did 5 years ago. So it's time for video to move forward and evolve. So what is IGTV? Well, it's a nod to traditional television and will feature videos from rising internet celebrities, artists, and pets, some of whom have tens of millions of social media followers. IGTV will be available as part of Instagram's app and as a separate app itself. The service does not have advertising at launch, but people are saying, research firms and all are saying that it expects, that everyone expects that it will have ads eventually and that marketers in the meantime will sign up stars for endorsement deals. So what this means is IGTV will be courting stars to post videos as part of their strategy. Instagram said it has signed up personalities, and one of the personalities that they named was Lily Pons, who has 25 million Instagram followers, and she will be on IGTV.
Who's that, Christine?
She used to be on Vine.
Okay.
And she is a comedian, essentially. She's a comedy content creator, and she used to be on Vine. After Vine sadly shut down, I think she's moved on to YouTube content as well, and she's very popular amongst the teens.
Okay.
Yeah. So,
thank you.
But you know, Lele Pons says that she is not going to choose science. She's still going to be posting stuff on YouTube as well as Instagram. And yeah, I know. And this comes as Facebook says it's going to launch a separate effort to lure video makers away from YouTube, offering ways for them to make money on the Facebook app. YouTube also said this week that it plans to update its commercialization options this week. And Instagram does not have any immediate plans to share revenue with video creators, but may in the future. I think it's going to have to.
I think they're going to have to, right? Yeah. Yep.
I have a lot of feelings about this. Okay, so fact of the matter is IGTV will exist primarily, if not only, on a mobile device, from what I can tell. And that's dumb. How many times have you stared at your phone for a whole hour straight? You know what I mean? Like, it's a video, right? So with YouTube, it makes sense for them to have longer content because you can view that on a desktop, on a TV, you know, places where you can be comfortable sitting down for that long of a time. Nowadays, with the attention span that people have with their phones, even a 30-second Instagram video, I will not even watch. I don't, like, have the time for it, you know? And that's a massive problem. Like, you can't hold your phone for an hour to watch this video. Do you know what I mean? So that's like my first thing. The second thing is also like, that's not the point of Instagram. It's not the point at all. Like Rich has just demonstrated that you can put your phone on a stand. But my point is that it's not like the concept of long form content is not designed for mobile devices.
Agreed.
So that. But also, you know, with Instagram as well, it's also not the point. Like, I think that a lot of Instagram's appeal as a platform comes from the fact that it has a unique, a way to show your content. It has the grid system where you can design a specific aesthetic. It's got the gallery feature. You know, it's got boomerangs and stories. And that, I think, is where its strength lies. It's short-form content, but keeping to specific aesthetics. With this hour-long content thing, it's moving away from the quality of the content, just like how long it is. And that's not, you know, what Instagram is used for to promote. You know, you're not going to sit through an hour-long video of someone, advertising like diet products, and that's what Instagram is primarily used for when it comes to advertising.
Well, I think Instagram is, for starters, going to stick to their strengths and, you know, do this on the mobile device. But then, you know, in the long run, they're going to have to evolve and move into desktop or TV, or, you know, that's what they're going to have to do if they want longer form videos.
I mean, what I see is exclusivity deals for particular artists. So exclusive to YouTube, exclusive to Instagram, or exclusive to Apple TV. So you will have to pick and choose where you want to watch your celebrity or whatever it is. That's what I would imagine.
And the celebrities will have to pick and choose.
Exactly.
The thing that I would understand if this was where they had gone with IGTV is if it was specifically for, you know, these influencers, but it was a kind of like a paid kind of like exclusivity subscription thing. Ironically, basically what Facebook is trying to do with its groups, which is wrong for Facebook, but would kind of work for Instagram, you know, so like you could like have an hour of hanging out with your favorite celebrity on Instagram, that sort of thing. I would understand if people would go to that.
All right. Interesting discussion. Thanks very much for all your feedback, folks. Thank you, ladies, for the conversation today. It's been fabulous, of course. There is food waiting for us outside, so we are going to wrap up the show. It's all the time that we have for today. But what we'll do is we'll quickly run through the stories that we covered, and then if you missed any part of this show, don't forget you can download the BFM app from the Apple App Store or from Google Play and listen back at your leisure. We started off with
how a scalp EEG and EMG system will connect your mind to a robot to help stop it from making mistakes.
Then moved on to a topic about how Facebook groups may soon charge monthly subscription fees to access them.
Yeah, and then that story about Microsoft acquiring Flipgrid. They are uniting for social learning.
Yeah, and then we talked about how Truepic is a startup that has raised $8 million to expose deepfakes.
And that final story about Instagram expanding into long videos to compete with YouTube. It's going to be called IGTV.
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 I just find this very icky.
Yeah. Oh. Okay, right. It's time for us to wrap up, but don't go anywhere because, as usual, coming up after the 1 o'clock news, it is the Breakfast Grill replay. Brian Kaplan, he's an author. He wrote The Case Against Education. So he's a self-described economic libertarian. His latest book, The Case Against Education, argues that much of higher education is very inefficient and has only a small effect on improving human capital, contrary to much of the conventional consensus among labor economists. The Breakfast Grill and he shed light onto why he thinks that higher education is grossly overrated and only works to signal the qualities of a good employee instead of increasing one's intelligence. That's all coming up after the 1 o'clock news. To take us out of the show, we have a little bit of Semisonic. It is closing time here on BFM 89.9, the business station.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.